Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised.
Loveline starts now.
Here we are again at Loveline. The phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. Please call in tonight with us, DJ AM. AM, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having
Appreciate
me.
Appreciate it. You grew up in Philadelphia, is that right?
Correct. Center City.
What does that mean, Center City? I don't know where that is. My mom's from Philadelphia. Center City, where the big city hall is, kind of?
Exactly, where the big city
with,
hall is.
With William Penn over the...
Wow, not many people know that that's who that is.
Is that who that is up there? That's how I figured it would be him.
Willie Penn.
How did you end up out here?
My mom was from here, born and raised here. And,
my mom's from Philadelphia.
Really?
We're born to be together.
Backwards. What's going on? Let's get married. Hey. She was out here, and parents split up, and, you know, she decided we're going home.
And she took you back out here.
And
were
I was
a kid
like, what
then,
do you mean? I'm home. I was 14.
That must have been a heavy transition.
That's the worst time to move a
But,
kid,
I mean, from
I think.
Philadelphia to Los Angeles, that is a heavy transition.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge transition.
Did you have, could you make friends out here? Were you sort of defensive and angry and that kind of stuff?
I was, I hated it for two full weeks. I had 14 days of hell. I thought, my mom moved me to hell. No one would talk to me.
Where'd they move you to, like North Hollywood or something?
No, to Westwood.
Westwood. Perfect.
To my grandmom's, my late grandmother's condo. In Westwood, that was lime green and had cottage cheese, funky ceilings.
Just to fill it out, what's like her ethnicity? She's like, she's old world, Eastern European.
Russian Jew.
Perfect.
Yes.
Perfect.
Oh, boy. Yes. Oh, Kinahura boy. Yes, that was her.
Kinahura.
Aive. Yeah, amazing.
That's awesome.
Yes. I've been very happy to be here, though, you know, since then. I lasted 2 weeks, and now there's nowhere else I'd live than L.A.
And
I love L.A.
How'd you get into the music business?
I've kind of always, dabbled. My dad bought me this boom box when I was real little that had a microphone on it, and I used to tape it to the speaker of the TV, and I'd make pause mixes. I had to play and record pressed and on pause, and I would watch, VCR, and I would know lines coming up on a movie, and I would unpause it and piece together these sentences. And actually, the first thing I ever made was a Gumby porno.
Oh, my God.
I was obsessed with Gumby, and I play all these Gumby tapes, and I would unpause it on certain words and made it sound like Gumby and his dog, Nopey, were having a lot of dirty fun.
So it wasn't Pokey?
No, it wasn't Pokey. It was Nopey. Remember Nopey? He barked and just went, nope.
The
dog Nopey.
The late Gumby series.
The whole theme was Nopey, let's bury the bone. That was the theme of it. It was about he was burying a bone, and I...
You still have it?
No, I wish I did.
How
so does my sister.
Thing?
She loved it. She thought I was an absolute nut.
And how old were you when you were doing, like, 16 or something?
Oh, no, I was...
Your kid.
12,
oh, this is back in Philadelphia. 12,
this is in Philly.
And so you're just cracking your family up then.
Yeah. That was my first, musical piecing, sounds together and stuff. And then once I obviously my parents' turntable, like every kid probably, just wanted to spin it back and forth. And how'd they get the men in these little grooves? And how's the sound in there? And
my kids, they don't even know what that is. They're like,
they
what are those
no
big
clue.
Discs, those things? They literally said to me the other day, you guys used to use a thing that you put an arm on a black thing. They couldn't even process what the materials were.
I've done a few parties where kids come up and they stare at the thing spinning around like, what is that?
Black that
licorice, word? Round, flat thing.
And this needle makes a sound? Is that how that works?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Now people can see you at what club? In Vegas?
In Vegas every Friday at Pure, which is at Caesars. I just started there.
Do you live in Vegas? You just go up and back once
here.
A week?
I go there every year. I go in and out very fast.
Wow.
Land, work, fly home.
Southwest, here we come.
South Wheezy. That is the goal.
So McCarran Airport's becoming your drive to the airport. Drive to the office, rather.
Literally. Yes, it is.
And then you and Travis from Blink-182, you got something coming up on February 19th.
Yes, we do. We play the acoustic Christmas,
yeah.
I don't know. Something. Inland Invasion, I think. Yes, the Inland Invasion. I get them all. Weenie Row, I get them all mixed up.
They're all the same.
We played a show for you guys. We just do a kind of interactive drummer meets DJ type of show.
And this is a show anybody can go to? This one at Guy's North. It's a new club, I guess.
It's the opening of a new club, and I think they can go. I hope so. It's a new club.
Let you know. All right, let's take some calls. Here we go. It's 1-800-LOVE-191. Oh, we got some interesting things here. This is now Rhiannon, 15. Rhiannon?
Hey. Is this Dr. Drew?
Uh-oh. Rhiannon, how are you, kiddo?
I'm good, and you? I'm like
Alrighty. It sounds like we're not getting the callers through here, so let's try that again. This is Chris, 23. Chris?
Yeah.
Hey, what's up, buddy? You're on with DJ AM.
Oh, hey.
Hey. This is where you
can
talk.
We do something for you, Chris? This is your time.
Okay. I was calling because, when I was in second grade, up until about the time I was in fifth grade, my cousin, I guess, molested me.
Yes.
And he's like 6 years older than me.
Right.
And recently, I've been in therapy and stuff because I'm bipolar. And I've never been able to tell my doctor about it. It always felt like it made me bad. And,
well, Chris, part of that feeling bad stuff, chime in here anytime if you want, but part of that feeling bad is the sense that you somehow participated in or caused this or maybe were aroused by this whole experience. It makes kids feel responsible for when, in fact, that's a very sort of primitive and grandiose way of looking at it. The reality is you're a little kid, you're going through life, and all of a sudden this victimizer comes along and swoops in, and that's that. You react as you react. It's not doesn't make you bad. You were a victim. I'm certain your doctors have hints about this already. It's pretty clear when people have been abused. You can kind of tell in how they interact with you and how they maintain themselves in their relationships. But I still would urge you strongly to tell them, because there may be other kinds of therapies they can sort of advise you to take. Things like trauma therapies.
The question I have is, when I graduated from high school, I kind of distanced myself from my family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I still talk to my mom, but I can't stand my cousin.
Yeah, I'm sure
like
not.
Around him.
Yeah, he's the perpetrator. You shouldn't be around this guy. This guy should be in jail.
Yes.
I was talking to my mom about it, and I tried to tell her over this past Christmas. Because she was like, I don't understand why you don't want him over here. You don't want him coming to our house for dinner. And I was like, well, he did things to me when I was little. And she's like, well, I don't want to talk about that.
Well, it's too painful for her to realize that she couldn't protect you from something awful like that. Chris, do not be around this guy. This guy is a criminal. He's an a-hole. I'm sure something horrible happened to him, but I'm sorry. I hope he burns in hell, such as it is.
Whoa. And I think it's very important that you do talk about this with your therapist.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the saying that there's an elephant in the living room and no one wants to talk about it.
Right.
And I think for any therapy, if you're bipolar and in treatment for it, it's very important to be completely honest with your therapist, because holding in certain things is kind of like going nowhere. If you go to the doctor and you tell him your arm hurts, and then a week later you get diagnosed with a stomach problem, you know, the doctor did his job. He checked your arm thoroughly,
right.
Your arm was fine, but
right.
You didn't tell him exactly what was going on. So
right.
I think it's important to cover that and try to, you know, begin to work on it.
Great. Alex, 20.
Alex from Kansas.
That's good. What's up, Alex? You're on DJ
hey.
AM.
Hey, what's going on, man?
What's happening?
I was just going to ask you, Dr. Drew, who would win in a fight, Joe Rogan or Henry Rollins, or would it cause cold fusion?
Wow. You know, I think Rollins is a bigger guy, but Joe Rogan's
he's got the crazy factor, though.
Yeah, but Rogan's a hired gun. I mean, a highly trained gun. You know what I mean? He really is.
Yeah, for sure. So. He's got bastard factor, too, Rogan does.
Alex, what's your question, buddy?
Oh, that's it. That's all.
All right. Very
Thank
good.
Thank you.
Fantastic. We had lots of interesting calls tonight. I blame you, DJ. AM, excuse me.
All good.
You're going to be performing in Sundance this week?
I just did.
You just did?
Yeah,
okay.
I'm back. It was
Sundance
cold.
Last weekend?
It's still going on.
Oh, my
but
God.
But I did two nights, and now I'm back.
How was that?
It was 4 degrees, man.
You don't like cold temperature?
Not really.
Do you ski or anything?
I've snowboarded. But I didn't get a chance
no
to.
Time,
I wanted
yeah.
to. I worked really late and slept, and I had a whole plan to do it, and it just didn't happen.
I was up there 2 years ago during Sundance, and it's just crowded and hellacious.
It is bananas.
Yeah,
man.
And it's...
Yeah, I
don't fully
know.
Get it. Yeah.
Me neither. I just go work, go out, you know.
All right, here's Jason, 25. Phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. What's up,
hey,
Jason?
Dr. Drew.
What's happening?
How do you keep your marriage so successful when a lot of marriages fail?
Well, I think the simple things that I think I've done to make things better or make things good,
mm-hmm.
A, waited to get married. Didn't get married in my 20s. I waited until my 30s. And then in my 20s, I could not have maintained a relationship with a raccoon, let alone a marriage. I remain completely devoted. In other words, there's not even a possibility of me screwing up. Because to me, I see that as, you know, unfaithfulness is an attack on these people that you love, and I can't imagine that. So that's just like completely out of the question. I listen to my wife when it comes to what the relationship needs. You know what I mean? As a guy, it's sort of hard to know what a relationship needs. It's easy to sort of focus work on your career and ignore other things or deal with the kids. I listen to her when she says something's necessary. I go, okay, we'll do that if we need time, whatever it is.
Okay.
And those are the simple things I do.
Did you have maybe a weeding out process of finding a woman who wasn't trying to sabotage the relationship too?
Absolutely. I think dating is a lot of fun. You should do a lot of it and figure out who you are and what you need in relationships. I really think that's very, very important. I also think that I'm actually thinking about writing a book about this right now, about this whole question of what causes passion in relationships. You know, most of what causes passion is attraction. And attraction is a really treacherous and unhealthy thing and people have. I mean, think about times in your life, A.M., where you're attracted. You know, as you get healthier, you attract and are attracted by different people as your emotional health improves. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And early on, and it's still, it's fun to be with somebody that you're really attracted to, but you have to learn to sort of read it, be careful with it, and understand if you had a traumatic history, that's going to cause you to be attracted to people that reenact the old traumas.
So would you say there's no passion in your marriage then?
No, I'm saying quite the contrary. I got the right mix. I got the right, just enough.
The balance.
Enough craziness that it's good.
Okay.
All right?
All right, thanks.
All right, good luck. All right, this is Max 24. Max, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, Dr. Drew?
What's happening? Hey. You're on with DJ AM. What's going on?
Hey, not a whole lot, man. Hey, okay, so basically, I have this anxiety about talking to girls, about actually even like flirting or asking girls out. This has like been like throughout my entire life. I can't even ask a girl out. It's like I get really tense even when I attempt.
Is it the fear of rejection?
Yeah, that has a lot to do with it, I think. And also, I think it also has to do with my childhood where I was kind of a reject.
Let me ask them, what's the worst thing that could happen if you asked and they said no? What's the worst thing that would happen if they said no?
Well, a lot of people say that all the time. And, you know, that's a good point. It's a valid point.
It is. But, the one thing that would probably be affected more than anything is your ego is kind of, you know, is jeopardized and on the line.
It would be a crush, and also, you know, I have a lot of self-worth issues and all that too. So I mean, it kind of plays in the entire thing as well, I think.
Can I give you a bit of advice about what to do about this?
Sure.
This is my theory on this that I've learned is that you have this low self-esteem, which is causing, you know, the fear of rejection that you're not worth it enough, which leads me to something I've learned that is, first of all, you in my eyes, it sounds to me like you're living the universal lie, which is as I am, I'm not enough. And and it's a lot of people believe it. And it sounds to me that, you know, the cure for this low self-esteem is to do esteemable acts.
Yeah.
So
act as if
to do an actual act of something. So what I've done myself is every single day I try to do something small, something completely unselfish, whether it's let someone over in traffic, help somebody carry their groceries, be there for a friend, something that does not benefit me whatsoever. And then tell anyone about it. You do that for yourself. Do you run and tell your friends, look, I helped some old lady with the groceries today or whatever it may be?
No, that's totally right. But the thing is that like I am what my friends would call the male Mother Teresa.
Right. He's super codependent. He's the other way. He does everything for everybody. He's very masochistic and has to take care of everybody else and suffer with that.
And you need to do that for yourself, man.
Right.
Because you're worth it.
Oh, I mean, I've been to Iraq and all that good stuff, and that made me feel good when I come back. You know, and everyone kind of looks at me now as just the Iraqi vet, you know, but that's a good thing. But
try doing some positive, unselfish things for yourself, right. for you to feel and know about, not to tell anybody else, not to discuss with anyone else. Do something to help somebody else out for you.
Right.
I think that's good advice. And let me just suggest a sort of a behavioral intervention. And that is that one of the things that somebody like you will do is for you to go up and talk to a girl, you're going to have to be super attracted. Again, this is back to this attraction thing. It's going to have to like overwhelm. You're going to really want to meet that girl, right? You know what I'm talking about, Max?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when you go up and if you're rejected, then that's shattering because you already have built castles in your mind about how this relationship's going to go.
The marriage, the house, buying
together.
I'm going
to have sex with her. Yes. She's going to be the greatest. I got to be with this girl. And then, boom, it's all shattered. So what you need to do is start going up to women that you're not so attracted to and maybe you are interested in, but not crazy having that sort of I got to get with her thing. And get used to being rejected by them.
Yes.
Or not rejected.
Yes.
And then along the way, you'll find some people that are interesting and perhaps you are very exciting to you. And you'll be equipped now to handle that experience of going up to and or being rejected or not. You understand what I'm saying, Max? I'm certain that's been suggested to you before, but I'm suggesting a little twist on it, which is you don't go up to the people you're super attracted to.
Right, totally. So just somebody that, like, she's pretty cute or kind of...
Yeah, somebody you're interested... Just some of your interests you want to meet. Just somebody you'd like to...
Yeah, ease your way into it.
Yeah, yeah.
Not someone who seems approachable.
Nothing exciting. Nothing exciting. Take it easy, all right?
Take it easy. All right, thanks, Pat.
All right, Max. Good luck. Who we... And the codependents are a whole other breed.
Yes.
And, your advice about having him take care of himself and set boundaries with others is good. Brian, what's up? You're 20.
Right.
Oh, come on, Brian. Screeners, what? Please get people to turn their radio off. Brian, what's happening, buddy?
Yeah, turn on.
You're on the air.
All right, cool. Dr. Drew, I got a question about my penis. And, well, because I spoke up with my girlfriend about 3 weeks ago, and I've noticed a difference in length and a little bit in girth and the erection.
So since you broke up with your girlfriend, you started shrinking. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there's a little shrinkage.
Brian, what's happening? Brian, will you turn your damn radio off?
Kill the radio, Brian.
Okay. Please. Thank you.
I got it.
AM, what do you think?
I think that's in your head.
You know what? I don't think so. Because when guys have rejection, their testosterone levels fall. And when they get depressed, their testosterone levels fall. And there's some evidence that there might be some little change, at least in tumescence. And so there could be some, and it could also make guys sort of be sort of less, more like a turtle during the day when they're feeling sort of down like that. A depressed penis, let's call it.
A sad penis,
thank you. And then it may sort of, not really, the erection thing I'm not sure I can buy, but during the day and stuff, things can sort of look shrunken up.
While it's flaccid.
It's protecting itself. It's sad. Yes, while it's flaccid. And the low levels of testosterone tend to affect that. So the fact is, yeah, you're sort of traumatized. And think about any trauma. I mean, you're in a car accident. Mm-hmm. The penis ain't out there
You're
in.
You don't have a Woody.
That's right. Things are going, it's turtle. It's thinking correct. Turtle all the way. This is Diane, 25.
Hi, I wanted to ask AM what he thinks about, since I know he's a vinyl DJ, what he thinks about all the things like Serato and stuff and people who are DJing with that kind of equipment.
What is that?
That is an amazing question.
Okay.
And we could go on for 4 hours about this, but we won't. I'll just let you know that.
Educate us. What's Serato?
Serato is to me, I'm going to go on record saying it is the greatest thing to happen to DJing since the turntable.
Wow.
I switched over to Serato a year ago.
Wasn't she comparing you to somebody who uses Serato?
No, she was saying she's saying she knows I am a vinyl DJ and how do I feel about the Serato movement. What's happened is DJs and clubs now have a better way of bringing, not having to bring records to work. There's two time-coded records, and on them is SMPTE, which is time code, and a laptop. And these two time-coded records on a real turntable control MP3s in a laptop.
I see.
So I only go to work with two records now.
I see.
And I have a laptop with me that has 7,000 songs in it. So I can still scratch.
Sort of like a virtual guitar or something.
Yes and no, because it's still a real turntable that I've tattooed on my wrist. It's same brand. It's the same needle. It skips. There's a mode that makes it not skip, but it's the exact same feel as a real record.
Yeah.
And on the record is actually this code. It's still, you play it on a real turntable.
Oh, I see.
But the actual song you're playing is in the computer being converted into digital format.
Got it.
I think it's phenomenal. Well, for someone like me who travels a lot to DJ, I don't have to schlep 17 crates. You know,
it's not different then.
No.
It's just a new technology.
It's a new technology, but it does add, well, for one, I'm really sad because this is the death of vinyl to me. As we were speaking about, records and your kids not knowing what they are, they probably never will, except for these weird time-coded records now that I use. But it's made my life a lot easier. It's opened crazy doors. I had the guys who created it at my house yesterday showing me the new version that I was like drooling over because I'm a computer dork.
Interesting.
And, it's amazing.
Was it a hard transition to make?
No, not really, because there's the startup mode is absolute mode, which is exactly the same as real vinyl. It has the same exact feel. You can needle drop, it skips, and it's you get to notice it is exactly the same. It's just kind of weird that the song's not on the record. It's in the computer, but if you move it around and scratch it, it feels exactly the same as a real record.
You can't see the record that you're playing, right? I mean,
you see it on the screen of the computer.
Used to pulling it out of a crate or whatever.
Well, they even had a fix for that. It basically reads your iTunes library. So if you have iTunes and you have tons of song in there and you have $500, you can go buy Serato and you have all of them. You can scratch any song that's in your iTunes and it sounds exactly like real vinyl. And what that has is the same artwork So it, like what you're saying, looking through the records and looking at the covers and feeling that, you have that on the computer screen. You see the picture of the artwork, which isn't the same as a big old 12-inch, you know, cover. That's why I love, you know, records. It's like a big poster comes with it, because it's this big square, funky poster, you know, in the back and the liner notes and all that. Now it's an ID3 tag.
Yeah,
and
for those
artwork.
Of you that have never had to live with vinyl, though, A, you pick up the record cover and it slips out and smashes on the floor.
Yes.
B, if it's over 75 degrees, it turns into like
a taco.
A taco. Mm-hmm. Diane, please. Are you kidding?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. And it's enabled. It also does have a lot of things that are, you know, enabled me to be a lot faster. I was worried it was going to slow me down because I already am. I play very fast, and it's sped me up by a full 2 bars. You know, I get ideas and I can do them instantly. And I don't have to go dig out the record. When I'm laying in bed and I think Bowie would sound really good with this one drum beat, I don't have to run down to my garage and find that record. You know, I just load it up and it's right there. I type in the word Bowie and there it is.
Can I ask you something?
That's it, Diane?
Question?
Yeah,
just one
real quick.
More quick question.
Yeah.
What's like the most rare record that you have in your collection?
That would probably be the one I was happiest to get was a Moog Indigo, which is it's this song called Eva, EVA, and it's the original sample from Gangstar's Just to Get a Rep, and it's a that, and I love my Serge Gainsbourg records, and I don't know, I have a bunch.
This is Linda 19. Linda.
Hello.
Hey, Linda. What's happening?
Hi, I just want to know, I have a question because, I don't know, when I have sex, I start squirting, okay? And, like, I'm 19 years old, and a lot of girls my age that I talk to about this never happens to them.
Okay, and, it is a common thing. A DJ gave it 2 thumbs up. He gave a very enthusiastic head nod when you mentioned this. But we got to take a break right now, so I want you to hold on. You hold, all right?
Put the cork on that.
All right, and get the sponges out.
Yes.
We will come right back to your question after this.
Hello, this is your radio. Loveline will be right back.
Hey, everybody, it's Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191, DJ AM,
yes,
in the hizzy.
In the heezle.
I'm going to join him
Dr. Dreezel.
Valentine's Day in Las Vegas at Pure.
Should we make out? It'll be Valentine's Day, we're in Vegas.
My wife's going to be with me, so she may get a little PO'd, but let's go from that to talking about squirting. Let's go back to something much, much better.
Oh, yes.
Linda's 19. Linda is curious about where that comes from, right?
Squirtles.
Linda?
Yes.
Oh, we didn't. Oh, there you go. We didn't lose you, did we? So ask the question again, because we're back after commercial here. Here we go.
Okay. Well, okay, my question is, okay, I'm 19 years old, and when I have sex, like, I start squirting.
When you have orgasms,
yes,
you squirt.
Yeah, even, like, even before I have an orgasm, like, way before I have an orgasm, I start, you know.
Well, this is interesting, Linda, because I've talked to other women, and DJ AM has got a very confused look on
puzzled
his face. I have talked to women who can dissociate the squirting from the orgasm. That's a definite feeling, and it's a definite release, but it's not specifically an orgasm. And then it's also with the orgasm. Very interesting. I think fundamentally what this is just muscular contraction in the area caused by high levels of arousal that is causing a sort of a concerted contraction around these glands in the area, the Bartholin's glands, the Skene's glands, maybe even the uterus and wall glands in the wall of the vagina get involved, and it's just bringing it out as a result. We don't, there is such a thing as urine coming out too. That's called, it's called orgasmic and female orgasmic incontinence, but that's actually pretty rare, and that's primarily women who've had lots of babies and they generally can't hold their urine.
That's never happened to me,
You know it's not urine, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know it's not urine. Yeah.
And there's an interesting syndrome. What's it? Because what?
Well, no, because, like, I don't know. Like, I've talked to a lot of girls, like, my age, and, like, this never happens to them. And,
no,
like,
it's rare.
My friend was telling me that, you know, it happens with people who are, mostly happens with people who are mature, you know, who are, older women.
Well, no, and it mostly, it happens... No.
I would think the opposite. Personally, that's my guess, but I don't know.
No, 18 to 23-year-old women have all kinds of problems having orgasms. They're just beginning to really have it with intercourse and with a partner. It's sort of a hard thing to work out. And some women are highly orgasmic, and it's just no big deal. And those do tend to be the more squirting times.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe I'm using that language. But
you,
Linda,
are.
Here's the deal.
You said it.
Linda, you're unique. You're wonderful. It's uncommon. It's not super rare. It's not that uncommon on this show. We talk to people with this talent all the time. Guys love it.
Notice how he called it a talent. And I'm sure that there are guys out there that are looking for you.
And
I bet there's a guy with a thing for that.
Oh, well, not just thing. But if you produced that, what would your first thought be? If you were having sex with somebody, no, no, Lynn, not you.
Oh,
I know.
I would think I should go get my penis bronzed because I was the man of steel.
Do you see that, Linda? You see what it does for a guy?
Yeah.
It does, he's doing a pose down and a touchdown dance.
Some guy's going to be posing in the mirror afterwards just like, I rule, flexing and calling his friends like, yeah, yes, for sure.
Yeah. Right. Well, see, I hope it's just nothing wrong. Like, I knew it was nothing wrong.
Linda,
but, like,
Linda, nothing wrong.
Why it happened.
It's nothing wrong. It's a talent, and it is something, there's a syndrome I was beginning to tell you associated with this, with women that do this feel ashamed. They feel like they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to tell their friends. They're afraid that the guys are going to freak out. Listen, your girlfriends, A, jealous. Your boyfriends, bronze their penis. Okay,
yes,
it's a
there
good
you go.
Thing.
Yeah.
All right, we need to say more. This is Stacy, 23.
Hey, Dr. Drew.
Hey, Stacy, what's up?
Just wanted to say, I called in like 3 years ago. You gave me some really good advice. I didn't get it then, but it was about not being obsessed with guys because I'm an abuse survivor. Not being obsessed with, like, going for the guys that I'm obsessive about.
Yeah.
And I didn't get it. I thought that was really impossible to have a relationship without being, like, feeling that way. But I just wanted to tell everybody and you, thank you, because it works and that it's possible, you know?
That's great, Stan. Thank you for calling. This is what I was thinking about writing about lately, which is that super high levels of attraction, if you're in a trauma survivor, if you're into trauma survivors, high levels of attraction, dangerous. Is that what I was telling you?
Yeah. Yeah, basically. And I think the best thing that you can do is let someone love you so you have no choice but to love them back, not see someone and be like, oh, I got to have it. That's what made me think of it when you told that guy that tonight.
That's exactly
that
right.
You got to have it, but that is not going to last forever, and it works. And I've been with someone for 2 years, and it's totally working.
Right, and you get stuck with a got to have it. That's what you're stuck in, is that state of gotting to have somebody who's not available, right, as opposed to building a relationship with somebody who's actually available.
Right.
Good, Stacey. Good job.
Good girl.
Well done. Let's talk to Michelle, 25. Michelle?
Yes.
Hey, what's up? You're on with DJ AM. It's 1-800-LOVE-191.
Hi.
Hey.
Okay, would it be better to not have sex with my ex-boyfriend and to sleep around, or to have sex with, you know, my ex-boyfriend, which I still enjoy having sex with?
Interesting question. So you've broken up with him. Does he have another girlfriend?
No.
We broke up
like days ago.
Are you doing anything? Well, this is you just planning to try to find a way to hang on to this relationship. Let's be honest here.
But
philosophically, let's discuss it philosophically. He doesn't have. There's nothing ethically wrong. You're not sort of dishonest. You're not violating his relationship with somebody else. You're just choosing. Listen, I'm just stating the facts. You're choosing to be with him as opposed to be with other people, even though that's just to get that sense of closeness and that physical contact, because you know being with lots of different people who you don't really know is just sort of unpleasant, right?
Well, exactly.
Here, DJ, what do you think?
I think that she misses him.
Yeah.
Definitely. And yeah. I think it's very comfortable and it's routine.
Stay with that she misses him, because that's where the pain's at with this.
Yes.
Okay, but the thing is, I broke it off. I still feel, like, really sad about losing the relationship, but
right.
I don't want to go sleep with a lot of, you know, I don't want to...
Hang on, but let's get back with the honest feelings about the relationship. You also don't want to feel the loss, so you want to string along some sort of connection with them, as opposed to going through the real work and the hard work of closing this one up, saying goodbye, and moving on with your life.
Right.
So, from an emotional standpoint, it's definitely better to cut it off completely with this guy. Definitely.
Okay,
especially
at the same time, I, you know, the sex is great, and I still want to have sex, but I don't want to, like, just jump into something else with somebody else and, you know, have sex with anybody, you know?
You don't have to.
You don't have to. No one's making you. What are your fears?
I like sex, so I'd rather have it with him than have to, you know.
I know, but are you compulsed? Are you compulsed to have sex where you would put yourself in an unhealthy emotional situation?
No. It would be completely unemotional.
No, and impossible.
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 Doesn't exist.
Unless you're high.
Yes. Yes, and then you're numb.
Unless you're high.
Yeah, because then you're numb. You don't feel anything. So either you're an addict, then you can pull it off, and that's not good either.
No, then we can have no other talk.
Or you're deluding yourself. It's going to be emotional. Just even talking, Michelle, you can tell how tender this material is for you, that you don't want to deal with the loss. You don't want to touch the loss. You don't want to experience the loss. And I understand that. It's painful. To lose
and you
somebody.
Said this is days old, correct?
Yeah.
Right.
It's raw.
Yeah.
And philosophically, yes, in an on a blackboard, if you said, should this young girl be with somebody that she's already been with as opposed to lots of new people and who knows who where they've been, yeah, on the blackboard, it looks like you should stay with your ex-boyfriend.
It would make sense.
In theory, it works, but I'll tell you what, Michelle, communism works in theory, too. And in reality, the human emotions prevail, and it's a whole different set of circumstances.
So I should just not do the whole sex thing and just...
Well, you ended the relationship. You guys broke up, right?
Right.
Okay, so do you want to...
The thing is, we broke up, but we decided that maybe in the future we'd get back together.
Here we go. That's just him. Oh, boy, you don't fall for that one, Michelle.
No.
But here's the deal. Look, do what you want to do. We're not telling you what to do. The fact is, you sleep with him, it's going to paralyze you. You are never going to get over this. You're going to stay stunted in this relationship and not be able to get on with your life and wonder why you can't meet good guys and why aren't you meeting, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's not going to go well. But whatever. Maybe this one will work out. I don't know. Tammy, 20.
Hi. I actually had a question. I had two. I wanted to know, is this DJ Am as an Adam Goldstein?
That's me.
Oh, wow. Okay. And then this is a completely different question, actually. I had a question. I was wondering... What does it mean exactly if you have a problem, like, you can't really, like, I date a lot of guys who kind of, like, you know, are kind of hard to get, I guess, and then when they start to really like me, then I don't like them anymore.
You
and
dump them. Yeah. That's Adam Goldstein's way. That's actually what I call the Carrie Bradshaw syndrome. You know, in Sex and the City, how she's always going for Mr. Big and Mr. This and Mr. That, but always longing for the guy. The reality is, if Carrie Bradshaw got in a relationship, she'd sabotage it. She'd ruin it. Because
I feel that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. Did your parents divorce? Your dad left?
No. My parents are both, like, you know, they're both professors. And
was your dad never around emotionally?
Well, my dad's kind of like, he was brought up a Jehovah's Witness, and my mom's Christian, so it's like a completely different family.
Yeah, so...
My dad is kind of like withdrawn.
Okay, well, that lack of emotional contact is what you think of as your love object. You love somebody who is unavailable and who you long for chronically, and you'll find that in your relationships unless you do something to change this. This is what I was telling that caller from Phoenix, which is, maybe the guys you're not quite so crazy attracted to, the ones that are kind of nice and interesting, go actually try to have a relationship with somebody that's not quite so exciting. And just see if you can actually build something real there, because your sense of excitement in relationships are going to be people that you can't have. And that's unhealthy. And you're going to be wondering why you're so miserable. All right?
Okay, thanks. And also real quick, sorry, one more thing. I was wondering, DJ Am, do you, what is the latest Vegas club that you're playing at?
Pure at Caesars every Friday.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to see him there on Valentine's Day. My wife and I can go visit him. Were there other clubs in Vegas you've done?
I used to be at the Hard Rock at Body English every Saturday and Sunday for a year and a half, man. Yeah.
They extracted you from there.
Yes.
So this is Jesse, 19.
Hey, what's going on, you guys?
What's up, Jesse? I'm with DJ AM.
Yo, before I ask my question, yo, Dr. Drew, like, I've been listening to you since, like, I was, like, 14, man. Like,
cool.
You helped me out a lot, man.
Oh, I hope so. That's good, Jess. Thanks.
Yeah, and AM, like, I DJ as well, my man. I just asked, a little nervous right now, but let me ask you a couple questions. First off, like, your setup, like, turntables, mixer, needles.
Oh, we were talking about that. You didn't hear a call about 10 minutes ago?
I was just listening to, like, you were talking about his laptop work or whatnot, but I didn't hear, like, you know.
I use two Technique 1200s. I use Shure needles with M447s. I'm a big fan of the Rain 5.6 mixer, and I now use Serato Scratch Live.
Right. Okay. All right, that's good. And my second question, as far as, like, who you looked up to, you know, coming up, you know, as a DJ and whatnot, and who you would say would match up to your work nowadays, you know what I mean? Like, in a sense, like, current and, like, you know, back in the day type, you know, stuff, you know?
Yeah, well, I grew up in Philly, like I said, and I you know, I was a huge fan of Jazzy Jeff, Cash Money, amazing,
right.
Amazing
yeah.
DJ.
Warner Scratch, you know what I mean?
Yeah, invented it, man. That's the man. And, you know, it's still Craze to this day. DJ Craze from Miami is a guy he's like not even human. He does things that I just can't even, you know, really comprehend. He's a genius. And as far as people on my level, I don't, you know, I'm not, I just, I just kind of worry about me and just kind of do, you know, do the best that I can. I don't know. There's a lot of amazing, you know, club DJs out there. I'm, you know.
Yeah, because, like, yeah, you're more on that club level, but do you still, like, once in a while, like, you're just practicing, you just, like, come down and just do, like, a little battle routine to yourself?
Oh, I always at home I play around, but people in the club don't really want to hear that. I wish they did because I love that style of DJing. You know, they kind of want to dance, but I scratch every day. I practice a juggle always. It's you know, it's
they
like
don't hear
passion.
That in clubs.
Eh, not really. I mean, huh. But not a full routine. The people are dancing, so I can't really stop and do like a
right.
You know, it's
a solo.
It's not a battle, a solo. Right. Exactly. Hold on, everyone, stop dancing while I solo for you from the booth. You know, I belong in the DJ booth, not on the stage. That kind of performance stuff goes on the stage, and those guys would eat me alive and make me look like a schmo. So I stick to people dancing.
Andrew 17.
Yes.
What's up, Andrew? You're on with DJ AM.
Hi.
Hey, you have something going on?
Yes, I was masturbating a day ago, and I kind of do it pretty hard, and I heard a pop in my penis, and then it ended up getting bigger, started throbbing,
uh-oh.
And then I didn't ejaculate or orgasm or anything, uh-oh. And all of a sudden it just shrinkled all the way up.
Did it turn black and blue?
No, it just I haven't been able to get aroused or anything.
Yeah, there's a couple things. There is a suspensory ligament that holds the penis so it kind of stays up,
uh-huh.
So it doesn't droop down. And it's a ligament so it can crack, you know, just like you can crack your knuckles.
You can break your penis.
Well, no, you can actually break your penis too. But this so there can be a snapping or popping noise just from popping or cracking that suspensory ligament.
Hmm.
That's uh-huh. nothing. And you can tear it too, but that's a little painful. But that wouldn't make your penis swell up and then go away.
Hmm.
The actual swelling up thing is when you break the cavernous bodies that swell up to make the penis erect. And there can be tears in those. It can be quite difficult, quite catastrophic.
Do you think that's what happened? He tore one?
I do think he had a little injury in this. Was there any black and blue?
No, it just shriveled really, really small.
Yeah, you should still see a urologist just to make sure, because it's something that if you need a repair and you don't have it repaired, it can lead to more your long-standing dysfunctions and curvatures and things like that. So you need to kind of ask, you know, go see a doctor just so you're having pain when you urinate or something, or you're having trouble urinating.
Kaiser for that or something?
Yeah, just go get it checked out. It's probably fine. It's probably just you injured it, and it's like you sprained your penis. You didn't actually break it. You sprained it. And it's probably going to get better.
Jam the penis.
Probably going to slam or jammer. You're probably going to get better by yourself. But again, I would certainly recommend you see a urologist because occasionally they need to be surgically repaired. Ooh. Yeah, I did a thing for Discovery Health Channel with this guy that was having sex with his wife, pulled out and didn't make it back in, and they heard this huge crack. And they stop what they're doing. He gets up and goes to the bathroom, goes, honey, look at this. And his penis had turned huge and black.
Oh, God.
Huge and shrunken, like flat, like a mushroom kind of thing. And she goes, honey, you got to go to the hospital. He's like, no, I don't think so. And as it got bigger and more painful, okay, now I'm going. And he actually tore across both the cavernous bodies and the urethra. He just completely ripped it.
Oh, gosh.
And the comedy in it is what are we going to do with the dog? So they take the dog. Take it to your brothers. We take it to the brother-in-laws. And the brother-in-law's like, they're like, well, what's the matter? What are you doing? And the husband goes up to the brother-in-law and goes, I think I broke my penis. Of course, the guy's laughing his ass
off. Yeah,
of
course.
And he goes, can I see it? Yeah, huh? The laughter stops.
Yeah, how bad.
That's the end of that.
One of those things. It sounds funny, and then you see it, and you're like, oh, man.
Yeah, it's bad times. But it was repaired surgically, and everything's good now. So, okay, the phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. Bring us all your calls. DJ AM can handle anything.
Take it. I'll take it. Call it in.
And can we call you Adam Goldstein? Is that
sure?
All right, DJ AM, a.k.a. Adam Goldstein. 1-800-LOVE-191. We will be right back.
Love Line.
Okay, wait. My hair. Oh.
We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, it's Love Line, 1-800-LOVE-191. We're arguing about whether New Year's Eve 1984 was Saturday or Sunday night.
Isn't this a real serious
Hang
argument?
On, but this is important. Because I remember, I was saying, as he was, AM was asking when I started doing Love Line, I said, well, I'm sure it's 83. Because I remember being in New Year's Eve 1984, broadcasting that Sunday night. And I'll tell you what, I'll even refine it further. It was not New Year's Eve. It was Sunday, January 1st, Sunday night, because it was the night before the Rose Parade. Because I remember I had to go through all the security to get into the radio station, and they never do the Rose Parade on Sunday. They always when the new year falls on a Sunday, they always do the parade on Monday the 2nd.
Mm.
So I guess it was the first, I was actually out there.
So my calendar has confirmed.
I confirmed it. So
there we go.
There you go.
You've been doing it one day, you know, shorter than you thought you had.
Exactly.
Goodness.
All right. This is Katie, 24. The phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. You're on with DJ AM. Katie, what's up?
What's going on? Dr. Drew, I love your show on Discovery Health Channel. Like,
oh my
it's
goodness.
Awesome.
Thank you.
It's the best ever. You're welcome. Thank you. And also, I saw you on Celebrity Fit Club like 2 weeks ago on VH1, and I was wondering if you could give me an update on what's going on with Jeff Conway.
I can't give you an update. I can tell you Jeff is I have huge affection for Jeff, and let me tell you what happened that day, because I think you saw what happened on TV, but let me tell you my story. Okay. I get a call. I don't know the show, and I don't know. I get a call that there's somebody on some show that's having a problem, and they want to educate them about the need for treatment. So I said, okay, listen, I'm not going to treat anybody. It's a boundary problem for me. I'm willing to come on and talk about addiction in general, what we do with this, and maybe bring this person along to say, gee, maybe I need to do something. And then in walks poor Jeff in the condition that you see him there.
Yeah.
And I'm in a position now where I have no alternative but to try to help him.
What was his condition?
I feel funny talking about it. It's on TV. You know?
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? And he's a great, great guy. And my daughter is so angry with me because I made Kaneki cry.
Oh, no.
The character we played in Grease.
Yes.
She will not speak to me because I made him cry.
Kaneki.
Isn't that,
you made
yeah,
him cry.
But, like, yeah. You could tell he totally needed a lot of help. And
oh,
I
he's
wasn't
a he. I
might. Like, bash on him or anything.
No. Maybe this is my codependency, but I have great affection for him, and I really feel bad for how he was suffering through all that. And,
yeah, for sure.
And I'm sure he's doing
great.
To
see this. Now okay. I need to see this. Now I'm dying to know.
It was a moment on Celebrity Fit Club. I mean, they were, you know, I was sort of, except for, frankly, what's her name? Sonny and Cher's daughter.
Chastity Bono.
What's her name?
Got me.
isn't that who I'm thinking of? No, wait. There was somebody on there I was thinking was very, very appropriate, and the rest of them were like kind of, I wasn't happy with how they sort of reacted to all that. You know what I mean? So
I need to set the TiVo and see
that
one.
Set the TiVo. Check it out. Okay, here's a call for DJ. And what's up, Jennifer? 23. Jennifer.
Hello.
There you are.
Hi. First of all, Dr. Drew, I wanted to thank you for all the good work that you do.
That's very kind. What's up?
You do such a great job. And DJ AM?
Yep.
Hi, my name is Jennifer, and I actually wanted to thank you for coming out with your story about having gastric bypass.
You had gastric bypass?
Yes, I did.
No kidding.
Bypass.
You look great. I mean,
thank you. Thank you.
I also had gastric bypass in March of 2005.
You willing to talk about it?
Absolutely.
How much weight have you lost with it?
I lost 120 pounds.
Fabulous.
Wow.
AM?
I was 324 and now I am 175.
That's crazy, right?
Yes.
Wow.
Crazy.
Congratulations.
And did you have a laparoscopic procedure or open procedure?
I had open. I was hoping for lap. That was the first thing I asked when I woke up is, was it lap? And my mom looked and shook her head no, and I was like, great.
Damn.
Because I knew the recovery time would be a lot more.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, laparoscopic is when they make smaller incisions and go in with a camera, and it's a much smaller scar. And I did the actual open, as Drew called it, which is what it is, where they actually open you up in the front, just like an old school 40s surgery, I guess, where they got to just saw you right down the middle and open you up with some big old clothespins and shove you to the side.
Call that a celiotomy.
And get in there.
And is there any side effect now for you?
No, just I eat a lot less.
How about you, Jennifer?
I had some side effects. I got really sick. I was in the intensive care for about a week.
What happened?
Infection?
I got a lung infection.
Yeah, you got pneumonia. That happens.
But I'm okay now.
Good. You didn't get a blood clot or anything?
No, thank you.
That's the more serious thing that's
but
problematic.
I had a question regarding body image.
Yeah.
Because it's been about 10, 11 months now, and when I look in the mirror, I see my old body still.
You still see a fat person.
I mean...
I noticed that this is what I've observed, and I'm not an expert in this area, but that people that really have food stuff and have body image issues, they will hang on to that I'm too big image until they can not deny it any longer because they're magically thin.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get sort of shattered by that and fall into a depression.
Mm-hmm.
Like their usual, what is that? What is the feeling? Did you ever have any of those feelings?
No, it's funny. I feel like I'm totally happy right now.
You feel good.
When I went through the therapy session beforehand to make sure I wasn't insane and my goal weight wasn't 80 pounds.
Right.
They said, what's your goal weight? And I said 200. You know, I weighed 324. I'm 5'11". I wanted to weigh 200 pounds because I have been 200 pounds before, and I looked fine at 200. You know, I didn't want anything, you know, that crazy drastic. I feel fine.
Did you have to have any other surgeries, any skin removal or anything to kind of compensate?
Nope.
You could have sprung right back.
Pretty much, yeah. Snap back.
That's great. Jennifer, how about you?
Well, see, I always thought, you know, like, oh, if I ever lost 100 pounds, I would be happy. Like, that's all I ever wanted was just to be healthy.
I'm just saying, Jennifer, that a lot of people have other issues, that big body keeps you buffered against a lot of feelings and other people. And when you lose that defense, it can be pretty upsetting. People get a lot of depressions. Yeah. I see a lot of alcoholism rage out of control right then. And by the way, you've had a gastric bypass. If you drink, the alcohol gets in much quicker at much higher concentrations. And so we see people with a predisposition for alcoholism suddenly exploding with the disease.
Wow. Yeah. I've
admitted
that.
Four people in the last year. Just,
really?
Where
gastric
they were,
bypass patients? Yes,
who had kapowie just exploded with alcoholism within the 2 years of their procedure. Yeah. So watch out, Jennifer, okay?
Okay.
All right, good luck.
Thanks.
Thank you.
DJ AM, also known as Adam Goldstein, 1-800-LOVE-191. Loveline will be right back. That's right, it's Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. Can you talk about that?
Sure.
That event?
Absolutely.
We'll describe it.
Drew and I were just breaking down this gaudy display of...
wealth.
Of wealth, yes. Correct. And in New York, I DJed this bat mitzvah. I won't say whose or anything, but it was... the performance is there. I just wanted to recap the...
it's in the Rainbow Room, which is the top of the RCA building.
Correct. The Rockefeller.
Rockefeller Plaza.
And
I mean, and you walk in, first thing happens...
Kenny G is playing horns in the lobby.
Just like a way a harp player would.
Just chilling. Kenny in the corner holding it down with a horn, kicking it for people.
All right, so you all right, then.
Head on upstairs to the kids' room where good, fun, friendly, family entertainment is Sierra performing in the kids' room. And then they open the big, you know, out the big main room of the whole thing, and I DJ'd for a good 12 minutes maybe before 50 Cent came out and performed 7 songs, I think, total, including remaking In the Club into Go, the Girl's Name, It's Your Bat Mitzvah as the chorus instead of Go Shorty, It's Your Birthday, yes. And I mean, my jaw was, you know, on the sidewalk, and I was on the 80th floor of the Rockefeller, followed by Don Henley, then Joe Walsh, then the Eagles.
Nice.
All the rest of them come out of there, flew out and did their thing.
Okay.
Followed by Stevie Nicks and then Fleetwood Mac.
Oh, my God.
Followed by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Followed by Aerosmith. Bat Mitzvah.
This is like some sort of summer festival concert.
That's the coolest concert that ever happened in the history of concerts, basically, and it's a bat mitzvah.
Was it covered by anybody? I mean, you know, somebody filmed it or reported it?
No, that's what was nuts. There was no, like, you know, it was no maiden, you know, feed or satellite feed or anything.
That's $3 million.
Keep going.
Oh, really? Yeah. Really? Just for the...
It was released. It was 10. They said it was $10 million.
Just for
$10 million bat mitzvah.
For the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I was thinking the entertainment must be 4 or 5.
Oh, yeah. I think the whole thing total was 10. But all I can think about the whole time is this is, you know, right after Katrina. And I'm just sitting there like...
Yeah. Wouldn't that be better spent than...
A feeling. Yeah, it could be better spent than a one-night, you know, event for... Well, I could go on and on, but I won't.
Okay. We'll take a call quickly. This is for DJ AM. You're Baji?
No, Baijay.
Baijay. I beg your pardon.
Baijay.
What's up?
First of all, Dr. Drew, I do want to say, truly, I love your show. You've truly been a blessing to me and to many others. You've been extremely educational, just been a great blessing, not only your radio show, but your TV show.
Isn't he great? Give it up for Drew, everybody.
He doesn't like my TV show. He's saying a but.
Oh.
No. Seriously, I just think... you know, especially people of color, you know what I'm saying? I'm an African-American.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, if you need a co-host or whatever, need help, I'll be happy to give advice.
Baji, well, you know, we're going to have this listener love line thing, and I am interested in diversity here. Let me tell you something.
Okay.
It's 5901 Venice Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90034.
Okay, is there a website? No,
wait. 90034, yeah. It's 5901 Venice Boulevard. Care of producer Anne, Loveline, 5901 Venice Boulevard. And send us a note about why we should have you on the listener Loveline. And then keep listening because we will announce who's going to sponsor the travel and then what nights we're going to bring people in here. It'll be interesting to bring listeners
in. And there you go. You could be hosting with Drew.
All right.
No DJ problem. AM. Okay. So. DJ AM, I'm coming from Detroit, and I'm originally from Detroit, not a true Detroiter. Went to school in North Carolina. My fraternity, Cap Alpha Psi, is known worldwide. I'm calling, where do you see, and since you DJ house, club, techno, acid, jungle, ambient, all nine yards, and, you know, hip-hop, where do you see Detroit booty music? How has that an influence on music today? I'm saying, where do you see it? Where do you see it going?
Tell me what that is. What's Detroit booty music?
Oh, Detroit booty music is truly, truly just bass drop, fast slammed. I can't even describe it.
Is it kind of like Baltimore club music, like that B-more stutter stuff, or is it more housey?
No, really, what it is, straight hip hop beats, booty, like. No, Detroit booty music will be considered Miami, Atlanta, booty, Luke, fast, but with house music.
Luke Duke. Yes. I personally love that stuff.
Okay, do you know DJ Assault from Detroit?
Yes, I do. I love
Detroit
DJ Assault.
Detroit booty music, you know what I'm saying?
Yes. I've always referred to that as B-more.
No, not B-more. Detroit, straight up Detroit.
Okay, represent Detroit. I love DJ Assault's
records.
Where
do you see that? Has that basically influenced house, jungle, ambient, since house music has originally started from Detroit, too, as well?
Oh, absolutely. I absolutely think it played a major part, and I think it's honestly has not seen the ending of it either. I started recently playing a lot more of that in my set, a lot of the oldie songs remade into that kind of style and fashion, and I love it. I'm a big fan of it, and hopefully it'll continue to grow.
So that was Eric 19. Eric?
Hey, Dr. Drew, I love your show. I didn't think it was going to be the same when Adam left, but it's still pretty rad.
God bless you.
I have an enlarged left testicle, and I was just wondering, well, it's actually not the testicle. It's like the tubes or pipes, whatever you want to call it.
How can you tell that the pipe's going up towards your body, you mean?
Yeah.
You feel it inside the scrotum? You feel the tube being bigger? Or
I feel it, and I can see it. It's like swollen.
Okay. You sure it's not a lymph node in the area there?
You know, I don't know. I've been meaning to have it checked out. I haven't.
Yeah, you need to have it checked. Whether it's a thickened, what's called spermatic cord, which is the whole apparatus heading up from your testy into your body, or if it's a separate mass or a lymph node, all those things would need to be checked by a doctor. You know, when people get into trouble with tumors and stuff, it heads up the spermatic cord. But infection, inflammation, all that stuff can thicken the cord too. But it's something that needs to be definitely checked out. All right, Eric, please, right away.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
Don't goof with this one.
I've had for a long time.
Yeah, well, that's not. Listen, if you remember, Lance Armstrong had it for a long time, and when he finally went and had somebody check it, the tumor had gone to his brain. You don't screw around with this. It just keeps on going. It doesn't let you know that it's there until things are way advanced.
Okay.
All right. Get it checked. It's probably nothing, but just get it checked.
Go see the doctor.
This is Nathan, 17.
Hey, Dr. Drew. Hey, DJ AM.
What's happening, Nathan?
Hey, I just had a question about your band with Travis Barker from Blink, from Plus 44, stuff like that.
Yep.
I know you guys did a few live shows, but are you guys going to release the CD or anything like that soon?
No plans on that whatsoever. We're just, it'd be cool. We're just, honestly, we did it. We started doing, you know, playing, you know, him playing drums and me DJing just for us, kind of, you know. He was, he hit me up like, I'm a fan of your DJing, and I would love to, you know, instead of going to parties all the time and seeing you, I get bored, and I'd love to, you know, play drums with you while you're DJing. And I thought it was, you know, a sketchy idea at first. I told him I had my hesitations. I said, you know, well, you know, he's Travis Barker. I mean, the dude is on top of, you know, his image and all this. He is one funky, phenomenal drummer. He really is. The man is amazing. So we just got a little rehearsal thing and did it together. And it's, you know, it's, as for now, we're not planning on really recording anything, but just continuing to do it live. And people, you know, it's a little bonus to me DJing, and a little, you know, I'm a little bonus to his drumming, I guess, you know, we can kind of compliment each other and try to do something exciting.
Now they're scheduled for Sunday, February 19th at Guys North. Hollywood, I imagine? Do you know where that is? I imagine. All right, Nathan?
Yes, Hollywood.
Awesome, thank you.
All right, buddy, take care. Take care. Bye. This is Anthony, 19.
Yes, I'm 19 years old, and I just recently proposed to my girlfriend Saturday. And
congratulations.
Good times.
I've been dating her for about a year and a half now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and like my dad doesn't, I don't know, he won't accept her, I guess, as kind of my fiance. And I've confronted him about what he doesn't like about her, and he can't really tell me. And I don't know, he's threatened.
He can't put his finger on it? He just has a bad feeling about it? He just kind of feels she's not the one for you, or does he feel you're too young?
Since I'm an only child, his parents are real control freaks, and he's the same way. So, like, I mean, I don't know. And since I go to college away from my house, I go to college 3 hours away from where I live.
Hey, Anthony, is he concerned about you getting engaged so young?
No, he's not concerned about us getting engaged so young because he got engaged at the same age I was. And you know, my parents have been married for 30 years.
All right. So. I'm worried about you getting married so young, I got to tell you.
As am I.
You just look at the data. And somebody asked me earlier in the show, and I don't know if you heard, what's the sort of recipe for a good marriage? I said, wait till you're done with your 20s. Date around, figure out what you want, who you are, and then think about marriage. Do not get married under the age of, definitely not under the age of 28, I'd say. You shouldn't be raising.
Do you feel the
ferrets.
Same way about that for men and women?
Well, more for men. For women, for the most part, yeah, I do. Men,
just
definitely.
Curious.
Men, definitely. Women are just more evolved than men generally.
They are, aren't
so,
they?
They really are.
Good
and
Lord,
so they probably
are.
Can handle a little more than that, but men definitely. And just the data on marriages under 21 or under 25, really, just abysmal, abominable. So why put yourself in that situation?
Well, I mean, we're going to have a really long engagement. Like, we're not going to get married until probably we get out of college and maybe even grad.
Well, why get engaged then? Why not just have a girlfriend?
Well, I don't. She's real insecure, and you know, I feel like that. You know, I really love her, and you know, I want this to work. So I just feel like.
All right. Well, the deal is, the more your dad says no, the more you're going to push on it. So it's him saying no is not going to make you not do it.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice to know what he's seeing, because you should listen to your parents' instincts on things, just 'cause they can see stuff you can't.
Yes, they can.
And but
Mama knows best.
Have you had a relationship where your mom just goes, oh, honey, I don't know?
Oh, yes.
Was she right?
Yes, yes.
She was right?
Yes, yes. And I didn't listen. I did it anyway. All through high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She had, mom has the eye. She knows.
And during high school?
And she would say, like, I don't like this one. She's a bad one. And I'd be like, but she's hot, mom. Come on.
She's a bad one.
My mom would be like, so bang her and leave her. You know, basically.
She would not say that.
Pretty much.
What did grandma say?
My mom
Same
rules.
Thing. Yes.
Yeah.
Grandma?
No, I didn't discuss that with grandma. Grandma doesn't get to know that. She doesn't want to think about that stuff. I mean, my mom's been the coolest, man. She is. My mom is amazing.
Did she remarry?
No.
She's just, were you the only kid?
No, I have an older sister.
What's she doing now?
She lives in Philadelphia still. She runs an eBay store. She used to manage Urban Outfitters.
Wow.
And she started her own website that started from an eBay store. She loves thrift shopping. So she goes thrift shopping, buys cool things, and sells them for more money.
Wow. So yeah. She owns the eBay store. She's not a franchise or something?
No, it's on eBay you can have like a specific
store.
Online, on the actual website. But she started her own actual website.
Wow.
Which is plaidponyvintage.com. See, I don't want to plug anything, but I want to hook up my sister.
All right, say
so
it again.
Go and look at her cool stuff. It's plaidponyvintage.com.
And you've got dj-am.com if you want to keep up
with
you.
I have a mix I just put up there. I did a mix on a radio station, that's all I'll say. And I put it up there for you to be able to download. So it's if you go to my website, dj-am.com, I think you can, actually it's dj-am.com/am1.mp3. Sorry, that's a whole mouthful, but it's not like officially there. I just kind of uploaded it. So
say
if you
it
can
again,
remember that.
am.1/mp3.
Yeah, that's long. am1.mp3.
.mp3. Kate, 20, what's going on?
Oh, nothing much. I have a question about painful sex.
About what?
Oh, boy. Painful sex.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Okay, so this has happened with two different guys, and I've only had sex with those two different guys. And when they push in, like, I don't know, what feels like they're just putting in out just until the very end of their penis is all the way in, it feels really bad, like it's touching something it shouldn't. And
is it hitting the back wall?
I'm not sure. So this is it. I just had my first feminine checkup. And
slow down here. Wait. I've got a couple questions. You've never had a pap smear till the age of 20?
I know. Well, I hadn't had sex really before then, so.
Oh, so you just started having sex?
Yeah.
And when the guy is deeply penetrating, at that point you feel like a visceral pain, like an inside pain?
Yeah.
Okay.
And my doctor said that my uterus was a little further back than usual, but like it's common in like 1/3 of women.
It's retroflexed. Yeah, it flops back. It's no big deal. So when he pushes in, it sort of flops forward again and feels uncomfortable.
Yeah. Is there anything I can do about this?
It's normal. You don't want to do anything with that. Just you got to learn to sort of position yourself and coach your buddy there to kind of take it easy and realize that too deep a penetration is not good for you. That's all.
Okay.
All right?
Well, is there anything I should avoid?
Yes, deep penetration.
Deep penetration.
Things that hurt, Kate.
If it hurts, if something makes you uncomfortable, don't do it.
Things that hurt. And again, if I have to coach another woman about not subjecting themselves to things that hurt because they're afraid they're going to upset their male partner, he's doing backflips just by virtue of your being willing to be there with him and have sex with him. That's it.
Yeah.
That's as good as it gets for him.
Yes.
He is. The fact that he has to have his penis 1/4 inch out or wear a grommet or something around it is not going to upset him. I promise you. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Bye.
Okay. Great. This is Carla, 22. What's up, Carla?
Hi, I had a question about relationships and self-confidence issues. I've been with a guy for almost a year now, and I know he's really into me and really attracted to me, but I get really insecure when he looks at other women, and he doesn't make a big deal about it. So I was just wondering if you had any advice and something I can do to get over that, because it's ridiculous, I know.
This to me goes back to the universal lie of as I am, I'm not enough. Because you feel intimidated by the fact that his wandering eye is looking.
Going to land on something.
Yeah, has someone? Yeah, exactly. His wandering eye is going to land right on something.
But something that's much more worthwhile.
Something more,
than she
much
is.
More better than you, of course. Because you know, but that's what you think. Has he ever cheated on you before?
No.
Has any other boyfriend? Did your dad cheat on your mom?
No, maybe there was kind of an issue with my dad, but not that we ever found out for certain.
Do you fear that he's looking for something else specifically?
I don't know. It's always been the case with different men in my life. It's just something that I can't really get over, and I know I shouldn't feel that way because I'm pretty confident. And
all right, let's talk about the facts for a minute.
Okay.
The facts are young males particularly scan the environment. They're all that testosterone they're circulating in their system requires that their eyes move around. They're hunting. They're searching. They're looking around.
Yes, they do.
And when things catch their vision, they're gonna track. They'll stay with it. They may not even be conscious of what they're doing. That's just in their biology. It has nothing to do with you. He has to consciously stop himself from doing that to help understand that you're being insecure and that it's not sort of pleasant for you to see his, but it's hard for a guy to 100% of the time not do that. So it's natural for them to kind of scan around. It doesn't mean he's attracted to other people. It doesn't mean he doesn't love you, which you kind of understand. The problem here is, I suspect, is that you're actually are close to this guy, and that's uncomfortable for you to be close to somebody. So you got to find a reason to F things up. You got to find a reason to sabotage this, make it his problem that he's ruining this relationship so you can get resentful and angry with him and end this thing because your expectation is he's going to leave anyway. So what you got to do is create an issue so you push him away or you leave him lest he should first leave you. Do you understand what I'm saying? Do not screw things up, Carla. You're trying to F this relationship up. Okay?
Okay.
And if you can't handle this relationship, the other advice I would give you is the one we were discussing earlier this evening, which is, okay, that's fine. Then stop going out with guys that you're so attracted to. Because those guys you're so attracted to that you really have to be with are the ones you're just going to reenact the same old dance again. If you find yourself asking yourself, why do I do or why do I find the same kind of guy or why do I do the same fill in the blank over and over again, realize that is those old sort of maps from the past that get reenacted no matter what, no matter how aware you are, they come into play. They're implicit memories from the past. They're fittedness with other relationships to which you are very attracted. So go for the ones you're not quite so attracted to and things will be less intense. Natasha, 22.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
We're good. You're on with DJ AM. It's 1-800-LOVE-191 here on Loveline.
Hello?
Yes, ma'am. We're here. What's happening?
Okay. I just have a question about my boyfriend. He's getting really obsessive. Like, he's not very talkative, which I hate. And second of all, he's just like, he pisses people off. like, in little things he does, you know? He doesn't
like
tell
what?
Anybody until the very end. Like, example, my friend, I hooked my friend up with his roommate and everything, and they moved into our house. Well, he just told her yesterday that she had to pay rent, and she's like, well, I can't pay rent right now, but I can do it next month, and he just blew up in her face. And I don't know if this is, like, going to constantly happen, or is he just, like, going through a phase right now.
Have you asked him? Is this, you know...
Have I asked him what?
If this is a phase, or if he's, you know, if he's... Mm-hmm. Has he showed you this for a long time? Did he also an overnight wake up and be kind of a jerk, or...
No. Like, see, we've only been dating for, like, 6 months right now. And I just moved in with him, and I have a son who's 18 months old, you know, and I'm just worried about him, too. Like, he's really good with my son and everything, but he gets irritated very easily, but he won't talk to me.
Hmm.
Natasha, talking is not going to help this guy not be an a-hole.
Yeah.
He has problems with aggression, and that's serious. If he cannot contain his aggression, there need to be consequences. He can do it. He needs to not blow up at people. He needs not to be an a-hole to people. And if he can't do that, on behalf of your child, get out of there.
Absolutely. On this, based on the safety of your child and you know, you in your own home feeling comfortable and safe.
Stop the Pygmalion project. You can't turn him into something different.
Yeah.
Okay? He is who he is. There are certain behaviors that are acceptable. Some are not. And if he's getting to the unacceptable range, get out of there.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right.
You got it.
He's not going to magically become super communicative and talkative.
No.
And even her fantasy is she's going to change him by talking to him.
Yeah.
Far too much is made of that, ladies and gentlemen. Far too much.
Yes, absolutely.
Talking does not do a lot. It's how you, what feelings you experience in the presence of other people and what you allow the people to see about yourself that really changes people, not what you say. The thoughts and words are all at the disposal of the feeling states and the drives. Daniel 20, what's up? You're on with DJ AM.
Daniel, you there?
Seems not. We'll try somebody else. This is Jamie, 24. What's up, buddy? Ooh. Hang on here. Oh. Jamie?
Yeah?
Hey, what's up? You're on with DJ AM.
Hi, DJ AM. You know what? I had a question about how you got started.
DJing?
Yes, I guess so.
How I got started?
I'm going to answer yes.
How I got it started.
You're the product of a normal spontaneous vaginal delivery.
And yeah, exactly. A sperm swam up the stream, and then the stork came, and that's how I got started in life. You know, DJing, I growing up in Philly, I had a good friend of mine who had turntables, and I saw them, and I knew that was something that I really wanted to do right away. And
How old were you?
I was 10. 10 or 11.
You immediately knew it. That's interesting.
I immediately knew it was something. It was a combination of that, and right around the same time I saw the Grammys where Herbie Hancock performed Rocket, and Grandmaster DST was his name, was Herbie Hancock's DJ, who did that
was
amazing.
Was this the thing we had the legs dancing around?
Yes,
space
that was the
there?
Video. Yes. It was for Rocket. That was the video for Rocket.
When and he had a keyboard that he wore.
Yeah,
he wore it like a guitar.
The whole video, everything was like a robot house, basically. Yes. It was a robot made.
But
it was kind of creepy.
But on that Grammy thing, they actually had the robot
legs
flying around.
Yes, they had the robot legs open the closet and the suit legs, and they kicked out. Well, and the DJ was there, and he had those headphones that looked like the Peter Brady earmuffs with the antenna coming out the top.
Right.
And he did that fresh scratch. And when I saw him making that noise, that frip, 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 I wanted to do that so bad. There was just something about that noise that right away I was like, that is the coolest thing I've ever heard. I don't know why. And I wanted to go wiggy wiggy and do all that stuff.
And what, you ran and got a turntable? Or
I used to did it on my parents' turntable and pissed them off by ruining all their Billy Joel records.
Oh.
But I did it. I was trying to cut up Elton John and get down. And right away, I just, you know, I knew it was something. And when I saw that.
But how did it go from that into something a little more formal, or did it?
Seeing Jazzy Jeff and doing the Transformer scratch, that was something that was really caught my eye.
So you saw there's somebody doing this, you know, systematically. There's somebody performing.
Yes, there are people performing. I wanted to try to make that noise. And then I saw it was a reality when a friend of mine had turntables, and he could do it a little bit. Uh-huh. And I was like, I want to do it. Let me try it. He wouldn't let me touch them. And then, you know, throughout the years, a couple friends of mine did have them. And finally, I begged my mom to buy them for me when I was a grown man. Even too.
Wow.
And
did you try to get jobs away? I mean, right away.
Yeah. Not really right away. I tried to get jobs. A friend of mine would be like, I'm having a party. You have to DJ. We weren't going to have a DJ before.
Yeah.
And I'd bring my whole home stereo.
Right.
I started doing this illegal after hours in L.A. for $40 a night, free Budweiser's and like a gram of Coke, basically. Which I'm 8 years sober now, by the way, but I don't want to promote that. But this is what I did it for, yes. It was called The Boiler Room. It was on Fairfax, and it was in this little attic, and I would, this upstairs, this car rental place, and I would DJ all night long for that. I'd bring my whole home stereo and home speakers and like a receiver and choose phono on it, and I would just, you know, play records for people. I loved it, you know. I kind of couldn't get enough of it, but it was very seedy and shady over there. And then that was the first job that really a promoter heard me at, okay, and gave me my first job at Dragonfly. Which
I want to hear a little more about the Budweiser's and Coke. You walk in the door and somebody hands you two Budweiser's.
No, that's the guy who ran it, who was a friend of mine at the time. That's what he agreed to pay me.
They paid you in Budweiser and Coke.
That was what I DJed for, the night.
I thought other people, as they walked in, they'd pay money, they get to come in, and they
That was my payment. He's like, dude, I'll give you $40. Okay. I was like, well, I'm drinking, and he sold Coke, so I was like, you better give me a gram, and he's like, all right, that's it, just one, and yeah, I would do it, and yeah, I was a bad, bad boy back
got
then.
Got it. And how long did you use before you got sober?
I used since I was, 12, and I got sober when I was 24.
How old when your parents broke up?
14 was the official.
So it was
official divorce.
Things already unraveling when you were 12.
Oh yes.
So that's what helped
you. Yes.
Regulate, as they say.
Yes. Well, my you know, growing up was kind of nuts. We had my father was gay.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, and I always, you know, knew a lot of problems were definitely going on from them.
Between them, they were fighting. And
yes.
Was he carrying on or something? Cheating? And
he had. We had a guy who, like, lived with us who kind of worked for my dad, who was my dad's lover.
Oh.
Yeah, it was kind of nuts, and I kind of figured it out actually before my sister, who's 2.5 years older, and it was you know, it is what it was.
Yeah,
it is what it was. But I found, you know, for me at that time back then, I needed some kind of something.
Sure.
And drugs, I guess, were it. Smoking pot was.
And
pretty
how
much
how
the,
far down did you go?
I was a full blown crack smoker.
Yeah.
You know, at the very ending, and I did that for the last 2 years of my using.
You and I are going to walk through a crack binge because they're very predictable. You mind?
Not at all.
Because it's very illustrative of how that disease works in terms of where you start, what you're thinking when you start, and where you end up, and how you know where you're going when you start and still go there anyway. We're going to take a break right now. The phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. We'll be right back.
1-800-LOVE-191. Loveline will be right back.
All right, it's Loveline. The phone number is 1-800-LOVE-191. DJ AM, also known as Adam Goldstein, a gastric bypass survivor.
Survivor.
Success story. And we're going to walk through a crack binge, okay? Because I think crack binges are really interesting in terms of illustrating how powerful the disease of addiction is.
Yes, they are. And yes, I'm a crackhead.
So here you go. So
crackhead sober.
Let's describe the scene. When you start out on a crack binge, okay, not your very first binge, but you're just a general...
In the crackiness, when you're already
binge.
A smoker.
Are you by yourself when you start out? When you start out by yourself, would you ever start out with other people?
At the beginning, I did. The disease turned into me wanting to really...
All right, well, let's start when you're with another group of people.
Okay.
So you were first hit, right?
Yep.
How was that?
It's very much like an orgasm.
Amazing. Okay. How about your second and third hit?
In the same night we're talking
same
about.
Same night.
Same night.
Second hit, third hit.
They're still, you know, it's still good. That burst of, you know, euphoria.
But
it doesn't last as long.
It starts to
wear off quickly.
Now, you've been on a binge 800 times, mm-hmm. and so you know it's going to go like that.
Yes.
You know it's going to be only good for the first few hits.
Correct.
Where does it start not feeling really much good at all? How many hits in, would you say? How many hours in?
As long as you have it, it doesn't not feel good. It's when it's all gone to me. It didn't start feeling good.
Didn't you start?
It started feeling a lot less powerful.
Then you start thinking strange things eventually?
Oh, absolutely. You start hearing things.
That doesn't feel good.
No, definitely not.
Okay, so you know you're going to that. You take that first hit, you know you're going into that state.
Absolutely. Literally 5 seconds after, say, the fifth hit is what you're asking about.
Yes.
I guess after, you know, the fifth one, right away from the first one for me, but, you know, 5 seconds after you take the hit, after you exhale it, the paranoia for me would set in.
So immediately get paranoid. Okay.
Beyond paranoid.
Okay. So now let's say we're a day in. You started out with a group of people. Are they still around?
No, not at all.
You
I'm
by yourself.
Alone.
Yeah. You're in a bay windows well lit room with the curtains open?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Quite the opposite.
You've got the you got a room, curtains closed.
Curtains closed.
Foil on the windows.
Foil on the windows. Blankets,
you're
door, barred, tables.
You're in the closet.
Yes.
With a single light bulb and a crack pipe.
No light bulb.
No light bulb. Dark in the closet.
Yes.
What are you hiding from?
From the imaginary people that are coming to get you.
And what are those people wearing?
White coats, police uniforms.
Uniforms.
Yeah.
There's an absolutely characteristic paranoia with cocaine, which is uniformed officials.
Yes.
SWAT, Army, FBI, people coming to get...
Coming to take me away. Huh?
And you would look out the window and see them. Where would they be? We're in Southern
Hiding
California.
Hiding in the bushes.
In the bushes. Always in the bushes or in the palm trees is the other one I get.
Yeah. Or you hear them on the roof.
So it's the strangest thing about cocaine is it causes an absolutely characteristic paranoia. Police, FBI, SWATs, Army coming for you. You board everything up.
Mm-hmm.
You get paranoid as hell. And then you can even start hearing things. Like Tom Arnold was telling me when he got really, really paranoid, he believed that the officers were across the mirror from him. We'd look in the mirror. And one day they told him to pull the white off his eye. It was a good idea to cut that off, to pull the white off and cut off.
That's one of the more insane things I've ever heard.
That's a good one, right?
And
that's
I know we've talked about this before. That's crazy.
And the deal is that I find that's, again, illustrative of the power of this thing. When you decide to take that first hit, you know you're going to be in the closet feeling like hell.
Yes. Yes.
You know it. You've done it 500 times.
I just spoke about this earlier this evening. About I remember, you know, saying after the same night, you know, going home after work when I'd know I didn't want to end up in the same thing. And I'd say, I'm not going to do it tonight. I'm not going to go downtown and I'm not going to cop and I'm not going to go home, board up the windows and end up with that same feeling when it runs out of misery and paranoia. And I would say, and I go home and I get on the couch and take off my shoes and go, I'm not going. I'm not going. I'm not going. And I'd watch TV, not going. Half an hour goes by, I start putting on my shoes and I'm going, I'm not going. Next thing I'm in my car and I'm driving and I'm crying, going, I'm not going, and I'm punching the steering wheel because it wasn't me driving that car. Right. You know, my disease had taken fully over. I had no tools to stop me from going down there and getting it, because with crack, it's a mental obsession. I couldn't get
it's
that thought out
it's
of my head
thing.
Until my brain got fed
and
the food.
And what I was telling AM was that laboratory animals do the exact same thing.
That's amazing.
All mammals behave their relationship with high doses of cocaine the same way.
Hmm.
They refuse everything else, food, sexual objects, socialization. They must. And there's actually a specific concentration of dopamine that needs to be achieved in the brain from the cocaine. And these animals will do anything
to get that.
To maintain it there.
Yeah,
not just get it, but maintain it there.
I have been humbled and brought through, you know, it was a painful, miserable, terrible way to live. You know? And I am so lucky. So lucky and grateful and blessed to be as clean as long as I have. You know, I really am to come back from that, because I really thought it wasn't going to end. It ended for me with, you know, a gun in my mouth. I was pulling the trigger. I mean, it was on its way down, you know. I couldn't look at myself for a long time. One night I did the routine, threw away the pipe and was, you know what, I can't do this anymore. I'm just going to end it all.
And what happened?
A moment of clarity.
Yeah.
You know, a moment of God in my head saying, this is not where it ends for me. This is not all my life has amounted to. I'm not going out like some crackhead who shoots himself. I can't do that. That's not who I am. And thank God there were, you know, people there to help me.
That is the one thing that I've seen repeatedly that guarantees somebody, not guarantee, but puts somebody on the road to recovery, which is believing they're going to die if they don't stop,
mm-hmm.
or total disgust. The disgust is not quite as powerful as the belief that I'm going to die and I don't want to.
Yeah.
But you have to be right there.
Once I actually did die, my heart stopped. And when I woke up from, I took a humongous hit, and I remember it had been a long night and, you know, smoking crack all night. And I remember when I came out of it and I realized I saw myself out of my body.
Wow.
I saw myself on the couch in this disgusting apartment with barf everywhere and no power and chipped cell phones as the home phone in the wall. And I saw my body there. And I remember when I snapped back into it and I woke up and I looked out, I started bawling my eyes out because I didn't die.
Yeah.
And I think that was the most painful thing, was realizing that I really wanted to die. When I realized I was still alive, I was like, man, oh, I was so, you know.
That's one of the more dangerous parts of addiction, is that if you don't care.
Yeah.
We were talking about that Jeff Conaway thing I did.
Mm-hmm.
He had that kind of,
really?
I don't care for that. And that's
so sad.
Yeah, that's bad.
That is bad. Yeah. That is the saddest
place.
But
when you can care and when you believe you're going to die, you'll get well.
Yeah. Yes.
But you have to kind of want to live, even just a little bit.
A little ounce of willingness.
Yes.
An ounce of willingness to try.
When you know that without changing direction,
you're not going to make it. Yes, absolutely. Thank
Very interesting. Well, thank you for that. This is now Jessica, 19.
Hi.
Hey, what's up, Jessica?
Okay, how are you guys tonight?
We're good. That was a very interesting conversation we just had, as a matter of fact. Now we're just addicted to chocolate.
Now we're eating Hershey's Kisses over here.
Junior producer Lauren brought in like a Halloween bag full of stuff.
Yes.
Oh, nice. Okay, well, I'm not sure exactly what the name of what I have is, but I'm going to go ahead and explain it to you guys, okay?
Okay.
All right.
You know when you get cold, you get goosebumps?
Yeah.
You know, when you're cold, you get, like, goosebumps in your arms.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, well, I have that permanently, like, on my legs, you know, on my arms, and, like, on my butt.
Is it psoriasis? Is it flaky?
No. You know what this is? Jessica, is it primarily where, say, the clothing kind of hits your limbs? Like, around the side of the arm where your shirt hits and on the side of the leg where the pants hit?
Yes, but I've had this for almost basically all my life.
I know. It's called hyperkeratosis pilaris. And it's basically just clogged hair follicles. And it's a common condition. There are treatments for it, but I wouldn't worry about it.
Listen to Dr. Drew break it down right now. Because I've always wondered that. I have a few friends that have that.
Have that
bumps
that,
on the arms.
Yeah, right here.
It's always right there on the arms. When you said that, I was like, oh, now I get what
hyperkeratosis pilaris. You can see a dermatologist. There's stuff to be done for it. But it's, you know, do the scrubs, the steroid creams, things like that, okay?
And I've been to a couple of doctors, and they haven't been able to treat me. Like,
Jessica,
what would you recommend?
Jessica, you've been to a dermatologist?
Yes.
Really? And they didn't treat you?
They gave me, like, this liquid, and the liquid was supposed to help my skin fall off or something.
Right. It's clogged hair follicles with old skin, basically.
Okay.
They're right. That's the right thing. You've got to do it really diligently, though, because it'll come back.
And one funny question.
Use as directed.
Now, when you have sex with someone and you feel that on their butt, how do guys react to that?
Oh, my God, honestly. She's having sex with me. I'm so happy. That's how guys react to that.
That's how we react.
Do you hear what I said? Jessica, here's how he reacts.
I'm getting laid. Thank you, God.
Thank you, God. Thank you, Jessica.
There you go.
Okay?
But you guys don't like that soft body kind of thing, and then all of a sudden you feel like this girl, some, like, Rocky Road body, you know?
Jessica, ask DJ AM again what he would think of that.
Woohoo!
That's exactly what I'm feeling her butt. Oh, my God.
Okay. I'm touching a booty. Yeah.
All right, relax, okay? You guys are way too hard on yourself, young ladies. Oh, you know, if you only knew how easy guys are to satisfy. Rebecca, 24. She's not on you. Hold on a second. Come on now, Rebecca. Put her on hold, guys, on the other end. I want to talk to her. There she is. Rebecca, 24.
Hi, yes.
Hey.
I just listened to you guys talk about addiction. Yeah. Are you there?
Yeah, yes. We're here. We're listening.
Sorry about that. There was some breaking news just a second ago. Sean Penn's brother was actually just found dead.
Yeah.
Chris Penn?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I'm sure it's alcohol, too.
So I'm assuming it's some kind of drug-related thing. But
yeah. Well,
because my question was, I'm actually just a few days sober from meth. And
from what?
Methamphetamine.
Oh, wow.
From glass. And I was curious if you may have actually any advice, DJ M, for someone who's borderline wanting to go back, but no, they shouldn't.
What have you done? First of all, how long are you off it?
9 days.
9 days. What have you done in 9 days to help you get off it?
Just straight detox.
Straight. You in a hospital, a treatment center, or by yourself?
My parents are actually super, super supportive. And
no.
We decided that's probably the best way first off.
Okay, hold on. We're going to have to talk more about this. This is not sounding good just yet.
No, not at all.
Yeah, that's what we call codependency. But here, relax. We're going to talk to you. We have to take a break, okay?
Gotcha.
So we're going to come back to your call in just a second.
BRB.
DJ AM, we're going to deconstruct Rebecca and her enmeshed family system after this.
Loveline will be right back. So get your problems ready. Ready.
That's right. It's Loveline. We're going to get back to Rebecca here, who was talking to AM about
coming off meth.
And you said something that triggered both he and I, which was me and my family, we decided what's best for me. And that's, oh boy.
Yeah.
So, Rebecca, let me just give you some words of advice about speed. It is pernicious. You feel empty and like you can't survive without it. Mm-hmm. You will crave it because the paranoias from speed are very different than the paranoias from cocaine.
Right.
We just talked about cocaine being a preoccupation with uniformed officers. And that paranoia goes away in 12 hours as soon as you stop using cocaine, typically.
Right. With amphetamine, Adam actually said something, too, that kind of hit home with me, is that it's more of a mental addiction.
Yes.
Well, there's no such thing as a mental addiction. It's all a brain disease.
Mental obsession.
It's an obsession caused by chemistry in your brain. And with that, and that basically all motivations in your brain are, become subservient to the drug. That's a biological process where all survival drives become focused on the drug. And stimulants do that more powerfully than anything. And so the pernicious quality with speed is that it persists after you stop. The feelings of emptiness and unable to function without it persist. The cravings are intense. And that irritability and paranoia, which rather than being focused on uniformed officers, is focused on people close to you, family, friends, neighbors, coworkers, that paranoia persists for weeks. And so you screw up your relationships. You don't trust other people.
Oh, yeah.
And that makes it and that makes it very difficult to stay sober. You need to be, Rebecca, in my opinion, in a structured environment, not a prison created by your family, but a place with sober people.
Absolutely. Maybe a sober living house.
I have to cut everything and everyone. That's a given. But
I didn't say that. I said be around people and learn to connect with them and to regulate. Use other people to help you regulate your feelings and deal with these drives who have been where you are. Not isolate, not be imprisoned, but to be around people struggling with sobriety like yourself.
What are you, I mean, you can't put a percentage or anything, but is meth addiction usually people tend to fall back towards it more so?
That's all addiction is about not being able to stop.
Yes.
But meth is very pernicious. It's the feeling that a lot of my meth addicts tell me is that they cease to exist without the drug.
Mm.
And so it's always there pulling on them. And if you're not in a structured place, it's going
to
drive.
Have you thought about going to a treatment center, even though you're 9 months, 9 days off? I mean, have you thought?
Well, that was kind of the original game plan. But one of the treatment centers in Newport Beach around here said that you had to be 2 days sober before even entering it.
Well, that's sober by the sea or something like that. But that's sober. Yeah. That's sober living. That's, well, Hogue is a treatment center. Go to Hogue. They've got a full facility.
Said that.
Hogue said that? No. They did not say that. Well, you know what? There's a weird thing with insurances and speed right now, and they won't pay for any detox from stimulants.
Right. Wow.
And so you have to go to residential level of care.
Well, it's a good
care.
Thing. You have 9 days.
Yeah. And if you go to residential level of care, you have to be off drugs. Right. So it's sort of a catch-22. So there may have been something like that going on.
And then just a quick brief thing, too. Also, antidepressants going along with that. I was mixing Lexapro with that.
Good times.
Good times. Fun times. Not really beneficial. Now that I'm off of it, do you suggest a specific antidepressant to kind of help with that?
Well, here's the deal with speed. Speed is the one of the few drugs that is a clear-cut toxin. There is brain damage from regular amphetamine use. End of story. Cocaine doesn't do that. Cocaine causes strokes and heart attacks, but it doesn't actually cause destruction of brain tissue.
Wow.
Ecstasy and amphetamine does. And so what you're going to be left with is memory problems and mood disturbances, and they will be chronic. So, yes, most meth addicts do need an antidepressant to overcome the injury that they've caused.
Hmm.
So there you go. Anything else to tell her?
Stay sober.
Here's what I would say, one thing, and everyone who's listening.
Don't do it alone.
It's an important paradigm. Your brain believes it's committing suicide when you try to remove the drug. That's what the brain is feeling, suicide. It will do anything to get the drug back. Liz, 22.
Most meth addicts.
Liz, stop listening to that radio, please.
Turn
What's
the radio
going
off,
on, my
please.
Dear?
Very long time listener for like 7 years and first time caller.
Cool.
So here's the deal. My boyfriend got diagnosed with an NGU. I think they thought it was chlamydia or gonorrhea because he was having painful urination, discharge. He came on doxycycline and said that I need to go on it as well.
Okay.
And he cleared up. Things are cool. But then probably about like a week later, he came down with the same symptoms. So they put us on doxycycline again, and then we like held off for having sex for a while, and then came back again. So we're on third cycle of doxycycline.
Okay.
So his doctor thinks I am giving it to him, but no. I'm like confused as to what's going on.
Here's what I would suggest you do: is that he should see a urologist, and that if you do have sex, you wear a condom because it may be an inflammatory condition or just an irritation, a mechanical problem. He needs to see a urologist. Oftentimes, prostate inflammation, prostate infections, even prostate stones can cause this sort of thing. So a regular doctor may not be enough to evaluate this. The treatments you've had so far have been completely appropriate and right on target, but the fact that it continues to recur suggests that there's something a little more going on. And again, it might just be an infection higher up in his urogenital tract, like in the epididymis or the prostate, and need a long course of antibiotics, or there might be something mechanically wrong. So that needs to be checked out. Okay, Liz?
Yeah, cool, because I get annoyed, because I feel like his doctor keeps on being like, and then you're reinfecting him.
And yeah, like, oh. And that's he's just playing the odds, and that's kind of the way things happen, is that, you know, people get past things back and forth. But you've had both taken three treatments diligently. That's enough, okay?
Cool. Oh, can I tell you a quick little fun fact?
Yeah?
Okay, so my brother is a longtime listener as well, and listened all through middle school, so it was, like, good sex ed. And because he knew so much from you and Adam, his sex ed teacher thought our parents were sex educators. So,
that's nice.
Thank you so much for educating your kids and making them so sexually aware and open. My parents are like, what's going on?
But All right, Liz, thanks.
Take care, you guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The parents, of course, are saying my name and spitting. Ian, 26.
Ian.
He's there. I hear him. Is he sleeping?
Ian, wake up, bro. Bye, Ian.
It was a good call, too. I was addicted to hookers, which is sexual addiction.
Whoa.
Did you have a sexual addiction part of all that? You don't mind?
Yes.
Because it's usually typically in there with this.
The high from crack is very much like an orgasm. Yeah. So to me, it was...
It just goes
for me,
together.
It was a lot about sex.
Yeah.
It was about... I wanted... I always explain myself as a glutton. I want... To
food, sex.
Food, sex, gambling. Yeah. I want to hit the lottery while I take a bite of a cheesesteak, right while I orgasm, while I take a hit of crack, while I'm shoving chocolate in my face, all at the same time.
It's good.
And I need it, you know? I want it all at once. I am glutton master general. Yes, it's bad.
Oh, I got to get this guy in line. Ian, 26. Ian, are you there? Oh, damn. All right, this is Haley, real quick. Haley, what's up? You're 19.
Hi, before I ask my question, I just want to say, DJM, I think you are so awesome, and I love your work, and I just all around love you.
Oh, and thank you.
Other than that, I do want to ask my question.
All right.
I did have a question because I've been dating someone since I was in high school, and now I live on campus. It's my second year in college, and my only issue is, he's a great guy, but he's, really, really jealous.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I should just, we don't go to the same college, so.
Do him a favor. End it.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly my advice.
Yes.
Do him a favor and end it. Yes,
because it's going to be miserable for both of you trying to keep yourself emotionally committed and big parts of yourself tied up in other parts of the country.
And I've been that guy before.
I've been that guy, too.
I've been that jealous, insecure, pathetic dude. Like, who are you with? What were you doing?
In the meantime, he could be enjoying himself at college.
Yeah.
He needs to get over this. It may be painful. It may be awful for him, but him ending it and getting over it will be a much better thing for him than being stunted.
He kind of gives me a guilt trip about it. Like,
I'm sure of it,
of
but
course.
You're doing him a favor. It's time. He's not a charity case. You need to get on with your lives. Relationships are supposed to end at your age anyway. They really are. They're not supposed to go on forever. All right, that's it. DJ AM in this house with us tonight. We're talking crack and cheesesteaks and orgasms.
It's great.
And we'll be right back.
If you need help,
call Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191.
Well, that about does it for Loveline. DJ AM, a.k.a. Adam Goldstein.
Yep, or Adam Goldstein, a.k.a. DJ AM.
And the website is dj-am.com. There's a download there at...
The same website, /ampart1.mp3, which go to Plaid Pony. Forget me. Go to my sister's website, plaidponyvintage.com. Look at her cool.
Plaid, P-L-A-I-D, pony, one word, vintage. Got
it. Correct. Or Google it.
All right.
Her name's Laura. She's rad. Just email her. She's the coolest. Buy a shirt from her.
Well, thank you very much for coming in. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
Sharing, being open, honest. Hope you come back soon.
Anytime.
We're about done. So until next time, this is Dr. Drew saying good night and stay well.
This has been Loveline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or this station. The producer for Loveline is Annie Golden. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.